As the foreign king yelled at her, Queen Cecile held her breath. She was getting used to angry kings and disappointed princesses. In her youth, she would have hated the diplomatic consequences. But now, well, she took a deep breath. Did she go willingly? Or did you, perhaps, force her? A vein on the king's forehead visibly throbbed.
My Elizabeth got lost in the wilderness, and you ask if she wanted to be there?
Did she go willingly? The king stepped forward, explaining himself again, slowly.
Yes, willingly. Exactly where you sent her, into an endless fog. She came back ill from exposure. My daughter placed her trust in you. Queen Cecile is tired of war, I told her. You'll marry a king, I told her. Simply meet him and agree to the marriage. She never even met your son.
Cecile considered this. The king wouldn't start a war over a princess with a head cold. She was in the clear. The king continued ranting.
I heard others embarked on the same mission to find a prince in a castle made of fog, and found nothing. Is this some elaborate joke? Are you poisoning all the eligible princesses? Trying to weaken other kingdoms and prevent another 15-year war?
That was a good idea. Cecile wished she'd thought of it. No, she firmly replied. The foreign king turned in a huff.
King Adam, wherever he is, has no chance of marrying my Elizabeth.
With that, he left. All Cecile wanted was to save her cursed son. But yet again, she'd failed him. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'm beginning Beauty and the Beast, the classic girl meets monster tale. But this isn't the version of Beauty and the Beast you've heard before. Today's episode takes place before the Beast became a beast, and it follows a fairy who deserves a restraining order. This is one of the oldest recorded versions of the tale, adapted for easy listening and not exactly suitable for children. I'm going to repeat that. Most fairy tales were not originally suitable for children, and Beauty and the Beast is no exception. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of Beauty and the Beast features kidnapping, attempted murder, attempted suicide, and a character who preys on a child. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. Before we get back into the story, here's some background. Beauty and the Beast is one of those archetypal tales that appears in cultures around the world. However, the French version is the most widespread and recognizable in modern pop culture, so we're presenting the oldest known version of that tale, La Belle et la Bête. It comes from oral tradition and is likely centuries older than its first written record, a story written by Madame de Villeneuve in 1740. This documentation of La Belle et la Bête was aimed at adult readers and is over 100 pages long. In 1756, de Villeneuve's version was adapted by Madame de Beaumont, and then again in 1889 by Andrew Lang. These abridgments spread globally, leading to standalone children's books, TV shows, and of course, blockbuster Disney movies. When most people today think Beauty and the Beast, they think of a watered-down and simplified version of La Belle et la Bête. We're presenting a not-so-watered-down, not-so-simplified version. Today's episode starts at the beginning, with the tale of how the Beast was cursed. Now, the Disney film version does feature this fairy curse, but in the original tale, the fairy's motives for cursing the beast are much less G-rated. It turns out that this tale of true love would never have happened if it weren't for an evil fairy who couldn't control her lust for mortal men. Long before her son was cursed, Queen Cecile was having the worst day of her life. Her husband, King Louis, had come home from the hunt with a spear in his back, and the wound was infected. He'd been bedridden for weeks. Every day, King Louis spoke less, ate less, and had less interest in feeling the kicks of the baby in Cecile's womb. This morning, the king began vomiting blood. Cecile doubted her husband would see the sunset. She prayed and wished, hoping a good fairy might come to save her husband and save their kingdom. But for all of Cecile's wishes and hopes, no fairy came. Her husband died. The next morning, Cecile gave birth to a son, premature from the trauma of losing her husband, but healthy. As Cecile lied in her bed, exhausted, covered in bodily fluids and nursing her newborn, the fairy finally appeared. Of course the fairy waited until now. Cecile hurriedly wiped snot from her nose. The fairy introduced herself as Belladonna. Belladonna's gray, cobwebbed hair swept the floor and gave her the appearance of being perpetually trapped in a spider web. Every part of the fairy sagged, even her voice.
"I thought I might help you. You're looking tragic."
Cecile began to apologize, but the fairy cut her off.
"I'm here for the boy. I'll help with a child's education. Put him in my care, and your kingdom will thrive under his leadership."
Cecile was flattered and disturbed by the fairy's offer. No way in hell was she giving up her son. Adam was her baby, and she was going to raise him. She might get help from a wet nurse, given how sore her chest was already, but she would raise him. Cecile said,
"Kind fairy, let me gladly consider your offer of aid."
The fairy nodded, displeased.
"May I hold him?"
Cecile shook her head. "He's eating."
"I can feed him," the fairy suggested.
Cecile held her infant closer. This was tricky. She didn't want to offend the fairy. That would be disastrous. But she also didn't want this fairy touching her child. It didn't seem safe. She changed the subject.
"My son would be blessed to have you as his fairy godmother, if you wish it."
Belladonna didn't answer immediately. She only looked at Adam hungrily. A fly got stuck in the fairy's hair. Cecile watched Belladonna watch it struggle and die. The fairy turned her gaze to Cecile. Cecile tried to untangle her own knotted hair. Belladonna cracked her pronounced knuckles, waiting.
"Let her wait. I'm the queen," Cecile thought.
After a tense minute, Cecile suggested the fairy stay here, at the palace, and help raise the king within the capital. The fairy agreed, hovering over the infant. She hovered over him for 3 years. Cecile found she had to hold her baby nearly constantly, or catch Belladonna squeezing and caressing him. Sometimes Cecile caught Belladonna's uncanny, predatory eyes raising Adam, and all she could hope was that the look didn't penetrate his skin. Everything changed when a neighboring kingdom attacked. Suddenly, they were at war. Cecile had to lead the troops herself. Her toddler son couldn't do it, and wars weren't won without the crown on the front lines. There was no other option. Belladonna convinced Cecile to leave the young king in her care. It was too dangerous to bring a child to the battlefield. Cecile kissed her son goodbye and mounted her horse.
In the back of her mind, she wondered if the fairy had anything to do with the impending war. It seemed... The trumpets blared. Her duty called. Cecile was off. As soon as Cecile was gone, Belladonna whisked the toddler king away to her own palace. She kept him there, safe, as war raged for 5 long years. The fairy spent most of her time educating the young king, ensuring he'd have the skills and knowledge to be a strong ruler. As he grew up, King Adam began to wonder where his mother was and why she never visited. He asked Belladonna. The fairy chastised him. He was supposed to call her mother. Adam apologized and explained himself. But why does Queen Cecile never come back from the war to visit me? Belladonna pursed her wrinkled purple lips. This was a hard one to answer.
Your mother hates that you look like your father, whom she loved. That's why she can't look upon you.
King Adam countered that his mother had to love him. That's what mothers do.
No, that's what I do, Belladonna said.
Luckily for Belladonna, the 8-year-old king took this for a satisfying answer. Whenever Adam brought up his mother after that, Belladonna told him to write letters instead. Of course, the letters never left the fairy's palace. On the war front, Queen Cecile thought each battle would be the last. But her forces were barely able to hold off their enemies, and when they did hold them off, strategy dictated that she pursue them to take new land and prove her might so she would not be attacked again. 5 more years passed as such. Now 13, King Adam often wondered why he could never leave the fairy's palace. Not that Belladonna ever left either. The castle was surrounded by a long moat with no drawbridge. And while the fairy taught him politics, history, and even a little French cooking, she never taught him to swim. Adam began to wonder if they were trapped. He thought there might be a spell around the castle's perimeter. Adam had picked up on the basics of magic after 13 years of living with a fairy, so he knew what to look for, an invisible wall or a dense fog. There was no fog in sight. Adam began skipping stones in the moat when Belladonna wasn't around. If he could just skip one far enough, it would hit the perimeter and boomerang back. But it was tricky. Too much force, and the stone would immediately sink in the moat. Not enough, and it would stop before hitting the perimeter. And there was something to the flick of his wrist that he couldn't quite master. He was skipping stones when the fairy hugged him from behind. He hated when she did that. Belladonna ruffled his hair and told him,
"I'm going away for a time. I shall miss you so dearly, my boy."
Her breath smelled like sweat. She explained that invisible servants would provide everything he needed in her absence and kissed him goodbye. Goodbye, mother. Belladonna stepped away from Adam and spread out her cobwebby hair. A gust of wind arrived from nowhere, picked up the fairy, and blew her away. It was the first time in his life Adam could recall her leaving. For once, he was on his own. We'll return to our story in just a moment from the Parcast Network. Now the story continues. 3 years passed. Neither the fairy Belladonna nor Queen Cecile returned for Adam. He spent his 16th birthday alone, but he got great at skipping rocks. One day, he finally skipped the perfect stone. It flew back and hit him in the shoulder. It didn't hurt, but he crumpled. He was trapped. Somehow, being alone and knowing he was trapped was worse than just being alone. He screamed in rage, cursing the deaf sky and the earless castle. He'd do anything to get out of this prison. He threw his crown in the moat, tripped on a rock, and stubbed his toe. In his moment of tragedy, the fairy Belladonna appeared. Adam almost wanted to hug her. Almost. Belladonna certainly wanted to hug Adam. She loved the boy she'd raised, and looking at him now, she loved him differently. The teenager had a strong brow and lean muscles. His bright eyes pierced her heart. His voice melted it. "Hello, mother." Belladonna knocked from her reverie by the word mother, gave him a terse nod.
"Don't call me mother. You're a man now. Call me Belladonna."
Adam apologized. He asked about Queen Cecile and the war. This angered Belladonna. Why didn't he ask about her? Didn't he care for her? She did everything for him. He'd be dead without her. She flew to a turret and perched like a crow, stewing. Why did she suddenly feel so strongly? She glared at the sky. Then she noticed Adam scrambling like a cockroach to the bottom of the tower she was on. He called up to her.
"Belladonna, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you."
She should forgive him. Make him love her. She jumped down, long hair splaying out like a parachute, slowing her fall. She hoped Adam would catch her and hold her close, but he stepped aside. Belladonna landed and explained herself.
"I had to check and see if your mother was on her way to fetch you. She isn't."
Adam said he understood, and Belladonna hugged him for much too long. The next day, Belladonna sat Adam down. It was clear to him she had news, probably about his mother. Adam suspected she had died in the endless war. It would explain the fairy's extreme reaction to him asking about his mother the day before. Adam braced himself for the worst. It was worse than that. Belladonna wanted to marry him.
"Who wouldn't want a powerful and wise fairy for a bride? You're lucky the ideal companion and advisor has been right here the whole time."
The words swam around Adam's head. This ugly, ancient creature wanted to marry him? He was barely grown, and even though he'd never met a girl his age, he knew from books that they were supposed to be attractive, or at least his own age and species. His book spoke of married partners having animated conversations, equaling each other in virtue, and growing old together. Belladonna had already grown old, long before Adam knew her. He sucked his teeth, thinking. Belladonna tapped her two long yellow nails on the side of her chair, waiting. Adam had to say something. Much like his mother before him, Adam felt trapped by the fairy's offer. He couldn't say no outright. That would offend the fairy. And if history told him anything, an offended fairy was a dangerous fairy. He started with humility and an appeal to her ego. Surely a fairy wouldn't stoop to marry a mere mortal teenager. But Belladonna was insistent. He wasn't any old teenager. He was a king. He was strong and wise. She'd groomed him to be a good leader and a good husband. Adam's stomach twisted. How could he say no? His mind raced through his fantasy of an affectionate marriage. Suddenly, the girl he dreamed of was blocked from him, not by her father, but by a fairy. Wait, her father? Parents. Parents always got in the way of people's relationships in books. "We need to ask my mother, the queen, for her blessing. It's the custom of the land," he said. Belladonna agreed. Perfect. Now Adam had an out. He'd leave the castle, find his real mother and never return to the creepy fairy again. Adam excused himself from Belladonna's company, saying he'd leave at daybreak.
"We will leave at daybreak,"
Belladonna clarified. Belladonna would let Adam leave the palace on one condition, that they speak to his mother together. They found Cecile right where she'd been for the past 13 years, on the battlefield. While most people saw pain and despair on the battlefield, which was now filled with young men whose fathers had died fighting the very same war, Adam saw an opportunity. He could use the war to stall. The longer he fought, the longer he could wait to ask his mother for permission to marry Belladonna. He could probably draw this war out for 8-9 more years. It was a selfish move, but Adam didn't have a normal amount of empathy. He'd only known the predatory, capricious fairy who raised him and now wanted to be his wife. Adam proposed he join the fight. Cecile and Belladonna both protested, but Adam insisted. He was the king, after all. So he led his kingdom's army to battle. Unfortunately, 16-year-old Adam had never fought a war, or even a battle, before, and it didn't go according to his plan. The return of the missing king inspired the troops. They fought harder than ever and hung on his every command. Enemy after enemy was cut down. They gained ground like a river in monsoon season. The enemy surrendered. The war was over, and it had only been a few weeks. His kingdom and his mother rejoiced, but Adam was devastated. He'd hoped the war would go for another decade. How could he get out of marrying the decrepit fairy now? He considered his options. The defeated king's daughters had starved to death during a siege, so there was no chance he could marry for a peace alliance. Maybe in the ensuing celebration, Belladonna would forget about him, or meet someone. She was surrounded by strapping young soldiers, many of whom had the genetic diversity you just can't find in a royal bloodline, and were, to be blunt, much better looking than Adam. Maybe being just a little bit inbred would save him. But as Belladonna helped him out of his armor after the treaty signing, her eyes and fingers lingered on his flesh. She healed his wounds with magical kisses.
"We still need to speak with your mother," she rasped.
Queen Cecile was his only hope. We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now, back to the story. Queen Cecile was every bit as tragic as the first time Belladonna laid eyes on her. The history of the war was written in the wrinkles on her face and painted in gray and white in her long plaited hair. Her exhaustion would not be helped by the ensuing months of helping her son rule two kingdoms he'd barely seen. But a wedding would lift the queen's spirits. Belladonna was sure of it. Belladonna and Adam approached Cecile in the throne room of the countryside summer palace, where Cecile had opted to rest after the war. Belladonna gave her a nod instead of a curtsy, and Cecile grimaced. It was time to ask the queen's blessing. Humans had strange customs, but it was a simple request to please the man she loved. Belladonna took Adam's hand, careful not to scratch him with her long, curling fingernails. She presented their desire for a celestial union. The queen looked somewhere between laughing, crying, and fainting. She said, "You are not suited to him at all. It's absurd. A fairy and a king? A couple must be well matched."
"You think he could do better than me?"
The queen didn't immediately answer. Belladonna met Cecile's eyes, and they confirmed her answer.
"You ought to congratulate yourself that your son is so amiable, so desirable, that I chose him.
accept that I have graced you and honored your family, and agree before I change my mind," Belladonna spat.
Cecile countered, "Kind fairy, you raised my son from a babe. Surely you can see where he and I might..."
"Yes, I raised him. I deserve him. He is mine."
Belladonna tightened her grip, her nails digging into Adam's wrist. She'd apologize later. Cecile argued, "If I'm to resign my position to another queen, she must be someone I can bow down before. Humans have never bowed before fairies. It isn't done." Belladonna blasted a looking glass to pieces. She whipped around, pulling Adam behind her. But the king balked. Belladonna looked at him, confused. Adam explained, "We don't have a blessing, and my mother did say a couple should be well-matched." At that, Belladonna's heart turned to dust. Curse them. Curse them all.
"Why would you think you are better than me? We are both strong. We are both powerful. We are both well-educated."
Belladonna stepped towards Adam, considering his aquiline nose, plump lips, and deep brown eyes. To her, these features combined into a face as beautiful as moonlight on snowy evergreens. She saw herself in the shattered looking glass, her face a speckled, wrinkly lump floating in frizzing hair. Belladonna continued as anger rose within her.
"There is nothing splitting us except beauty, and beauty fades."
In time, Adam would know what it was like to be ugly. In a very short time. In fact, that time was up right now. Belladonna composed herself, then spread her arms wide.
"I curse you. I curse your vanity. Become a monster. I curse you with stupidity. You shall be as dumb as a beast. You shall remain so until a young woman who willingly enters your castle, fully confident you will kill her, agrees to marry you."
Belladonna had made her point. The queen begged on her knees in front of her. Cecile implored Belladonna to punish her instead. Turn her into a monster. Just release her son from the curse. Belladonna told the queen to get up off the ground. Humans didn't bow before fairies, remember? In a gust of wind, Belladonna vanished. Adam writhed on the floor, struggling to feel his newly grown tusks with his oversized paws. He saw himself in the shattered looking glass and screamed. So much for not offending the fairy. Cecile and Adam fell into utter despair. There was no way forward, no going on. Nothing mattered. They didn't care about their kingdom, which still celebrated Adam's victory and the end of the war. With her husband and son both lost to her, Cecile found a sword and raised it above her chest. With his face and mental faculties gone, Adam threw himself into the moat. In their most tragic moments, a fairy appeared. This fairy, Delphine, saw the escalating dual suicide attempts and saved their lives. She chained the mother and son up in the dungeon for their own safety and asked why they were ready to end their lives. Cecile told the tale, since Adam was having trouble stringing together sentences. Delphine, unfortunately, was unable to undo the curse of a fairy much older and more powerful than her, but thought perhaps she might aid them in breaking it. Delphine meditated.
"You must keep it a secret," Delphine declared.
Cecile cried that all the Summer Palace servants knew of the curse by now. Most of them had overheard Belladonna's screeching utterance, seen the monster king jump into the moat, or heard gossip that the queen had lost her mind. Delphine nodded.
Just one moment.
Delphine flew throughout the castle, turning each and every servant into a statue. She then arranged them in a lovely garden with lots of sunlight. Next, Delphine summoned a great fog. She hid the summer palace within it. Then she unchained Queen Cecile and Adam the Beast and brought them to the palace doors. She explained that fog would keep the castle and the prince's beastly nature hidden. Delphine would control who went in or out, so only those who had a chance of helping the king could see him. Cecile remarked that it wouldn't be terrible to spend some quality time with her son after all these years. But that was not to happen, Delphine explained, because someone had to rule the kingdom. Cecile was to return to the capital, where she would tell everyone her son was continuing to study with the fairy Belladonna. Delphine enchanted the castle once more, charming it to provide for the beast. All he had to do was ask, and invisible servants would act on his whim. Delphine said goodbye and informed Adam the Beast she'd be back to warn him of any promising visitors. Delphine and Cecile left in a gust of wind. Adam, now a beast, tried using his massive paws to skip a stone across the moat and into the dense fog. It bounced back at him. He'd gone from a king in a cage to a monster in a cage. All he could do was wait. Next time, we'll continue the tale of Beauty and the Beast, but we'll be focusing on Beauty's unexpected origin story. And Belladonna? Well, we haven't seen the last of her. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more Tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or listen on Parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. And if you didn't enjoy the show, feel free to curse us so we can become ugly beasts, or shoot us an email. Your choice. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Carrie Murphy, additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Maggie Admire. I'm Vanessa Richardson.